well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those deads up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there. I think I can get it to go down.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello. Welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I'm well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am fine. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing all right. And a person in the state Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. What's your name and occupation?
There you go. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Good. I feel old.
Indeed. And from the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
Great.
Excellent. So folks who are curious, who have stumbled upon us, we are Dark Discussions News Network. This is specifically one of the podcasts on the network and is actually the original thing that created the entire network. And this is Dark Discussions Podcast. This should be episode 499 of the podcast when it comes out, because I'm hoping to release it actually tomorrow. And so for folks who are curious, the time and day we were recording this is August 12th at 7:39 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 2021. The year. For folks who are still curious who we are, well, basically, the Dark Discussions News Network is a network that is a website, www.darkdiscussions.com, which includes all sorts of things, including articles, movie reviews, release notices, a podcast, a bunch of new video recordings that Eric does as part of his Eric's movie. What is it called, Eric? Eric's movie show, is it?
It's Eric's Movie Corner on YouTube.
There you go. Thank you. And it pops up. All the episodes are popping up on darkdiscussions.com. Anthony Thurber has a new video review as well that's coming up. And so basically, it's updated continuously with news articles and whatnot. So if you follow genre news or pop culture, it is a website you would want to check out daily. Eric, what else do we have over there on that network?
That's an awfully broad question, but I think you want me to talk about Patreon.
Yes.
Patreon is a service that lets you financially contribute to support your online artists like us. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things, and by we, I mean Phil, web hosting and server space and audio file serving and computer equipment and so on and so forth. So if you would like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions and draw one at random on a quarterly basis. So you can go to darkdiscussions.com and follow the link on any page of the site to get to that. Any and all contributions are greatly appreciated.
Indeed, indeed. So thank you for all those folks who do participate in Patreon. There's not many of you, but we do appreciate all those donations because, again, the website and all the fees that are required to host it do add up immensely, especially now that we've become a network and host more than Dark Discussions Podcast. All right, so I think we can probably get into our topic tonight. If there's any news or anything like that, we can bring all that stuff up at the end of the episode. But until then, assuming we have time, we will pretty much just be talking about our topic tonight. And Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about M. Night Shyamalan's latest movie, currently in theaters, Old.
No kids allowed on the beach? What?
That's not true!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
Are we there yet? You said 5 minutes. Technically, it's been more than 5 minutes.
Let's just all start slowing down.
Wow. Can you believe I found this online?
I guess it's not that secret a piece.
Whoa! Who would leave this?
From the hotel! They're so rusted!
What's happening?
Found stuff from the hotel in the sand.
I don't know.
What happened to her?
Body has decomposed.
How quickly can that happen?
7 years.
But she just died.
Wait, where are the kids?
Frank!
Kara!
Come here!
Hey, have you seen my children?
Mom? I'm right here.
Dad, why are you looking at me like that?
What's happening to us?
My daughter just turned 6 2 weeks ago.
Mom?
Whatever's happening to us is happening very fast.
You have wrinkles.
There's something wrong with this beach.
What's happening?
Mom! 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 I'm scared!
We have to get off this beach!
People are blacking out going this way.
She makes it to the ledge, she might have a chance.
Why is she stopping?
Why is she stopping? Kara, wake up!
Wake up!
They have to know what this place does.
I don't know!
You're lying!
Look!
What is that?
A message.
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
We're connected to something bigger.
Oh no. We're here for a reason.
That's right. Eric pretty much summed that up. M. Night Shyamalan, he is the director and the writer of the screenplay based off of a story called Sandcastle by Pierre-Oscar Levay and Frederick Peters, it says here. The film was also produced by him, meaning M. Night Shyamalan. This film stars a number of not well-known people, but a lot of character actors that people have seen everywhere, even if they're not necessarily familiar with their movieography. But
I think Annabeth Davis is a pretty big name. At least yeah. I know who she is.
Who is it?
Annabeth Davis. She was in Army of Darkness and Schindler's List.
And a bunch of other stuff.
Annabeth Davis. Which character was she?
She was Adult Maddox.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's others of note too. Alex Wolff, he was the guy that was in Hereditary, the kid, mm-hmm. right? Abby Lee, who's been in a number of genre films recently, including the last Mad Max film. Gail Garcia Bernal is supposedly someone people know. I'm not familiar with. Rufus Sewell, obviously, is well known. Probably one of mine and Mike's underrated films that we like, the one with Jennifer Connelly there. What's
Dark
that
City.
Film? Thank you. And of course, Ken Long. We've seen him places before, among other people as well. So that's pretty much the people in front of the camera and behind the camera. Obviously, there's cinematographer should probably be mentioned because of it's probably the highlight of the film. Michael Giolakis. He's done a number of films with M. Night Shyamalan in the past, but then he also has done David Robert Mitchell's films, or for folks who aren't sure who that is, the guy that did It Follows. So I guess we can get into what we felt about this film, how we heard about this film, and all those other things. And let's start with you, Barrett.
I had seen this film advertised for a while. I'm a M. Night Shyamalan fan, and I thought this movie was okay. I wouldn't say it's his worst film, and I would not say it's his best film. I mainly enjoyed it. It's okay. That's how I feel about it.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Mike.
I don't remember how I heard about it. I know I think I've seen the trailers for it. Actually, I think it might have been a Super Bowl commercial. They may have had, I don't know. Anyway, however I heard about it, it is there. It is an M. Night Shyamalan movie, so I was going to hear about it one way or another. And talking about it online, I realized going through M. Night's catalog, there really aren't any of his films that I've seen that I have not enjoyed on some level. Now, in the case of The Happening, it was not for all the right reasons. I rather enjoyed watching how absolutely horrible it was and laughing at it. But for the most part, even when he misses, when I think like Lady of the Water was probably a miss, I think there's interesting things. I actually like this one a lot more than I expected to, given the kind of lukewarm word of mouth I was hearing beforehand. It is kind of an extended Twilight Zone episode. The writing can be a little heavy-handed here and there, but I kind of liked the premise. It is kind of a body horror thing, which I always enjoy or often enjoy. My only real complaint about it, if I had one, besides a minor issue in the theater, was that I think maybe the ending was wrapped up a little too tidily. A little too neatly, but the opposite end is, this is actually based on a comic book called Sandcastle, which the comic book really doesn't wrap anything up. So it's sort of like, I kind of like something that was in between, but I don't know. But it's not like a big deal. I kind of respect the way he was able to kind of come up with some weird rationale for everything by the end. So I would recommend it personally.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Eric.
I think the first time I heard about this is when Christy brought it up. It really wasn't on my radar, but I tend to like M. Night Shyamalan more than I don't. So I was perfectly willing to go see it. It's certainly not a perfect movie, and I'm kind of with Barrett. It's not his best. It's not his worst. It's kind of right in the middle there. But I would encourage people to go buy a ticket for this movie just to support it, because people are always saying they want something original. And I've never seen anything exactly like this. So it's original, even if it's not perfect. So
I agree with that, by the way.
Encourage people to go see it. We'll get into all the nitpicks and plot discussions, and apparently Christy has a bunch of stuff she wants to say about some of the themes in this movie, which I'm looking forward to hearing. So not like Sixth Sense level, but not The Happening level either. kind of square in the middle there, and I would recommend checking it out.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, I heard about it either through like a YouTube commercial that you're forced to watch because you can't skip forward, or it was Chrissy, it was something like that. But again, I'm similar to Eric. I didn't even know this movie existed until within the last like month or something, so I didn't know M. Night Shyamalan had done a new film. But I do like some of the things that folks have said here. Mike made an interesting point, which is most of the M. Night Shyamalan films, even if they're not necessarily good, they have some interesting ideas or whatnot. This film here was okay. I wasn't a big fan of it, but I did not hate it either. it goes a lot into personal demons and things of that nature, which can be interesting, but I think that kind of bogs down a lot of the film. And then there's a lot of things that people do and react to that seem a little, if not too convenient, too unrealistic. You would think their panic or whatnot would be a little different. Also, there's a 20-minute epilogue or so that could be considered questionable as well. So I don't know. I don't think it's a great film, but I don't think it's horrendous. So somewhat, Eric said, it's somewhere in the middle out of his films. But all in all, this probably will not be in my top 20, but it definitely wasn't necessarily a waste of time either. Abe.
So this was kind of a film that's kind of hard not to hear about, considering, you know, who's behind it. I saw it yesterday just to try to keep it as fresh as my mind as possible. And it's actually originally based off a graphic novel by Frederick Pieters and Pierre Oscar Levy. So there's actually actual original source material. The whole everything that came from it wasn't a Shyamalan's originally. I never read it, but it does get me more interested in that source material, because I'm sure it was handled better than it was in Shyamalan's hand, because I thought this movie was a hot mess. I thought the script was really poor. I thought the dialogue didn't sound natural. No one talks like this. None of the kids, none of the adults, everyone just sounds like it was written by someone who never heard another person talk before. This was almost like Tommy Wiseau levels of bad in terms of dialogue. Interactions were just really stilted and very awkward, kind of cringy too. Some of the body horror things were kind of cool, but it felt a little, I think because they couldn't show too much, because maybe budget reasons, the impact was kind of lessened, and also the performances kind of took away the severe, heaviness of whatever transpires. It is interesting in the premise, but execution is everything too. Just the premise can only hold stuff up so long, depending on how it's handled. And I don't think it was handled too great. I think the epilogue was kind of overly long. I think also it could have been more ambiguous. I think instead of just trying to explain it away, it's not a horrible film in most other aspects, but it is a very weird watch. But I don't know if I would recommend people going to the theater to see this. I honestly think maybe if it came out later, on some streaming service, then maybe. But I wouldn't pay ticket theater, prices for it, because this movie is really not that good. It's not really that terrible either, but there's so much better choices out there. There's further reasons, but we'll get into that as we get into spoiler territory.
All right, sounds good. And Chrissy.
Okay, so I agree, with Barrett and Mike and Eric. I really enjoyed this movie. I've been an M. Night fan for many, many years, and I don't love every single thing he does. But I have never walked out of an M. Night movie saying that completely sucked. There is always something interesting for me in an M. Night movie. And for me, this falls somewhere solidly toward the higher middle. When I go to a film, especially for M. Night, I expect a lot of symbolism and I expect a story to be told in subtext. And for me, going to an M. Night movie is like a treasure hunt and a giant puzzle. And this one was loaded. There was lots of symbolism and subtext, which I'm going to talk about later. The premise was simple. I enjoyed that the, quote, twist was not necessarily the thing happening to them, but it was the how and the why of it. I honestly think there's a mention in the opening that kind of gives you a really obvious clue as to what it is. And I think that was kind of done intentionally because he didn't want you to think that it was going to be a typical twist. I like that this movie has more than one thing to say, but I also liked that it was an existential drama. And I think this is why we're probably seeing lower audience reviews to it for it. And I'll talk about that later, because if I go further, I'll ruin things before the spoiler. I thought the way they aged these people was done beautifully and realistically. I loved that any gore was very minimal and very tastefully presented, which I thought was much more effective and much more toe-curling because it left so much to the imagination. I thought the pacing was solid. I liked that the characters' issues and backstories were kind of meted out slowly, and were sort of told to you and shared in indirect ways, rather than here's a whole bunch of crap at the beginning like we normally get in a Hollywood film. This was not a perfect 10 for me, and it didn't make me go, oh my God, this is the greatest movie ever. But I do think it's one of the better entries in his canon. I definitely preferred this over Unbreakable and Glass. I consider Signs to be his best film. Split is up there for me too, but you know, Split was different. Split was more like entertainment. This is a thinking movie. And all of his movies, each one as a different animal, has a different tone. So it's kind of hard to actually compare all his movies, I think, because each one feels different. And the other thing he always does that's interesting is he's always talking about something different with each film. He's always making a point, and it's usually a point about something different. His themes are the same, but his thematic statements are always different. And that's always a win for me. But this movie actually is still bothering me. Like, there are things I'm still processing. I saw this Tuesday night, and I'm still thinking about it. And for me to still be heavily thinking about a film after 3 days or 2 days, that's kind of, that means it was a win for me personally. But for me, that's what good art is supposed to do. It's supposed to make you think. It's supposed to make you feel a little uncomfortable, and it's supposed to force you to look at yourself and the world around you. So again, I agree with the guys, not the best, but not terrible. And I mean, you know, I liked The Happening. So, you know, but then again, I found things in The Happening that I enjoyed. There were some nice things in there too. So anyway, that's how I feel. And I do agree with Eric. I think, you know, we're always complaining that we want different types of stuff in theaters. And I have not been to a theater since the pandemic started. And this was the movie that got me out there. You know, I mean, I didn't even see Jungle Cruise in the theater. I found another way to get it. So, yeah, so that kind of says something. So anyway, that was my thoughts.
All right. Sounds good. So let's see. Eric.
If I can just piggyback off of that last comment. Yeah, something interesting to say, note, is that, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, for those of us who have been around for a while, it's hard to realize that he's not the young kid on the block anymore, which is what he was when he came out. That he's been—we've been watching his movies for 22 years now, starting with Sixth Sense. And out of all the films he's made, there's really been genuinely one sequel, which was, because I mean, I know technically Split is a sequel or related thing, but you don't get that until the post-credit sequence. So it's hard to count that. Nobody went to see it knowing that it was an Unbreakable sequel. So you basically had Glass. And then the only franchise thing he did was Last Airbender. And he kind of did that when he was kind of struggling to come back and make a name for himself again. So I can almost give him a pass on that. Although I understand that's the one film of his I have not seen. And I understand it's also pretty horrible. But
I enjoyed it, but I don't know anything about the Airbender mythos or any of that, so that's probably why.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, I have not seen it, and I'm not familiar with the source material, but I have heard if you are a fan of the source material, it's an absolute travesty.
I heard even without seeing the series, it's absolute mess.
Yeah, I think that's the one film of his I never saw, because I actually heard that it was not worth my time. And the person, normally I don't listen to people when they tell me that because I make my own decisions. But this person I really truly respected, and he was like, dude, just don't. You're going to come out of there like hating M. Night, and you're such a fan. Just don't bother. So I avoided it like the plague. And to me, it felt like it was really out of his sort of canon of work anyway. But yeah, I mean, Mike, to I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead with what you
said.
No, that
was it. I said what I was saying.
I think too,
mostly new stuff.
Well, and I think too, one of the things I did want to mention tonight also, and again, this is spoiler free. I'm being very careful about being spoiler free until we put up the alert. I also think that one of the reasons M. Night is so tough to be consistent with in terms of what's good and what's not so good, especially with American audiences, is that American audiences are really keyed to this idea of brand, right? They expect certain things from certain products, and that's fine. You know, it's fine for shoes. It's fine for McDonald's. It's fine for middle grade book series. They want, you know, and when M. Night came out of the gate with The Sixth Sense, you know, everybody's like, oh, M. Night. Okay, all of his movies are now going to be like The Sixth Sense, and they're all going to be creepy, and they're all going to have this twist. And honest to God, true artists don't work like that.
I was going to bring that up, Chrissy.
Yeah, I mean, they're always – go ahead, Eric. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel kind of bad for him because of that branding, and everybody feels like when they expect a twist from him. And I think that he feels like he's expected to provide a twist.
Yes.
And sometimes I think that ends up with – a subpar movie where maybe he could have made one that was a little bit better without a twist.
It's become a bit of his trademark after all.
Well, it's hard to tell. I haven't read interviews with him or seen much in interviews with him. I have no idea where his head is at. He may just like those kind of stories. And I think it's also fair to say his real problem is that he hit a home run right out the gate with his first at bat. Mm-hmm.
True.
There really isn't a huge twist in, like, in Signs.
No, there's
not. But every movie has a twist or a turn in it. Otherwise, it's, you know, I went to the store, I bought milk, I came home. The end. You know, there's nothing interesting happening. There was a light in the sky and it turned out it was nothing. You know, those aren't interesting stories. You have to have a turn in there somewhere, a twist in there somewhere. There's always like that, you know, the darkest hour, right? As the heroes have a plan and everything is going wrong at the end until finally, you know, Luke turns off his targeting computer and blows up the Death Star, whatever it may be. So they all have it. But now that people started by hanging the M. Night Shyamalan twist guy thing on him,
mm-hmm.
Everyone just takes the normal turns you might have in a film and just say, it's a twist. You know, we got to have a twist. And it's not, and yes, a lot of his films do. The Visit certainly does. I don't think this really does. There's an explanation at the end. It's not a twist.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a twist either. Totally agree on there.
I don't think The Happening had a twist to it.
No.
Good or
no.
Bad. I don't remember Lady in the Water well enough, but I don't think that had one. I don't. Unbreakable did at the end. And I don't think Signs did, as I said. I think it's, you know, I know he produced The Devil, which I guess kind of did. You didn't direct it. But I don't know. So I think it's, yeah, you're right. Absolutely unfair that he has a label hung on him. I think the other thing that it's interesting is that he gets nailed for constantly putting himself in his films. But, you know, like everyone loves that Hitchcock did that.
What's a Hitchcock?
I always love seeing him in a bit part when he comes on. That's fun for me. And like you said, Hitchcock does it. There are other directors who do it. Like,
right.
You know, they have Stan Lee popping in and out of the Marvel films and stuff. I mean, what's the problem? I don't
get it. I think the real problem was that the village had an ending that I kind of predicted before I even set foot in the theater, which is also a problem when you become known as the twist guy. People go in looking for a twist.
Mm-hmm.
The twists work best when people aren't expecting the twist to happen. But I think it was so ham-handed, I think, at the end of that film, which I really enjoyed up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just, and then once that was over, it was definitely ham-handed, but it became a thing, sort of like Quentin Tarantino got roasted for. He had a scene in, I think it was Django Unchained, that people like, because he had to give it to an Australian accent and did it very badly.
It was pretty horrendous.
You know, it's very different than like your Stan Lee, who's on screen for 2 seconds, or Alfred Hitchcock, who just walks by, you know, holding an umbrella or something in a film, is that he gave himself a massive exposition dump and what was going to be a very awkward bad scene in the first place. And then he decided to spotlight himself in a very awkward bad scene.
Oops.
But in this case, in this film, I thought he was perfectly fine. He has, you know, he has a cameo, but it's a small one. It is a role. He has dialogue in it, but it's not a thing that is pivotal.
I think too, what's interesting is that, you know, with M. Night, like when I said, you know, we all here have been watching his films for years. We've had the opportunity to watch him grow and develop. You know, when I compare The Sixth Sense, which was awesome, okay, I'm not dissing The Sixth Sense. I think it's an awesome movie. But when I compare that work to what I just saw with Old, there's a level of maturity that I see in his work that has kind of developed. I mean, whether the films were good or bad or whatever, you can see him grappling with different concepts and different philosophies of life and different existential concepts like faith. He's growing. Like, he's not just stagnant making, okay, The Sixth Sense, okay, great, now I'm going to make Signs and it's going to be the same shit. Okay, now I'm going to make The Village and it's going to be the same shit. And now I'm going to do The Village. No, if you line them up and watch them all in a row, you can actually see him maturing as an artist and as a human being and grappling with these more difficult subjects. And to me, what appealed to him about Old, I'm pretty sure, is that, you know, like many of us, I believe he is a Gen Xer, we're all grappling now with middle age. We're grappling with the downhill side. And one of the things I had said to a very good friend of mine who loves existential dramas, you know, he's having a rough time with his midlife crisis and the pandemic going on and everything. And he had said to me, oh, are you going to go see Old? That so looks like a movie we would have gone to see together. And I said, do not see this right now. This is going to send you over the edge, because it is really on a very deep level grappling with the hopelessness of your own death. Like, it is just not, it's depressing and it's oppressive. And when I compare this film to something like The Sixth Sense or Signs, I see an immaturity in those films, and this is like the films of an older man. You know what I mean? Does anybody understand what I'm trying to convey here? I just think,
yeah.
And I applaud his courage, because despite everybody making fun of him and he had, you know, he fell down and he was trying to come back, dude, this guy just makes what he wants to fucking make. You know, applause. He doesn't sit there and go, oh, okay, I just wrote 6, you know, whatever, books on the same thing. I'm just going to do 25 more books and they're all going to be the same. He doesn't do that. And I think more than anything, even if he did turn out something where I was like, oh God, that was so fucking bad. Like, even if he did that, I would still have respect for him, just because I really think that he's really trying to speak from his heart with his stuff. And yeah, a lot of times he kind of fails or he messes up or whatever. Well, nobody's perfect. But, you know, I would not think of any of his work as a spectacular failure. I just think it's different each time because he's growing and he's still playing with new, fresh things. And the one thing I can say about M. Night is that every time I see a new film by him, I see something new. I see something different that he's trying to do. He just doesn't sit there and beat the horse over and over, the same horse, you know? But whatever. That's just maybe my opinion. But I did want to talk about that just because I think that that's why there's some reviews that are lower. And the existential drama part of it is a big piece of it. Because especially where we are now in this world, the last thing a lot of people want to see is go watch a movie about their own encroaching death. And they have to sit there and ponder what their legacy is going to be. And I'll talk about that later. But yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie about that type of thing. And it's very heavy. And a lot of people don't want to deal with that. They just don't. They don't want to think about it, you know? So anyway.
All right. Sounds good. So, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki.
A vacation family discovers that the secluded beach where they're relaxing for a few hours is somehow causing them to age rapidly, reducing their entire lives into a single day.
All right. That sounds pretty much it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so for folks who aren't familiar with the podcast, we are a podcast that reviews films, but also critiques and dissects. So shortly we'll be putting up a spoiler alert that will come up, and then there we'll talk about anything and everything about this film. I don't think we'll have much to discuss before that because we had that whole M. Night Shyamalan career comprehension and whatnot, that probably would have been part of what we would have talked about before the spoiler anyway. But I'll ask anybody if they wanted to bring up anything before we do throw up the spoiler.
Yeah. I just want to call out the cinematography in this movie. I thought it was pretty cool. There were some really interesting uses of camera movement that I thought were quite effective.
Indeed. And most reviews, or pretty much every review that I've read, both negative and positive, and there's a good many of both, said that was the highlight in their opinion, in it. The cinematography, absolutely. And also the set location of the beach. Anything else anybody want to bring up before we throw up the spoiler alert? All right, so...
Oops!
All right. So at this point, we are going to throw up the spoiler alert and talk about everything and anything about the film. A lot of the film's interesting because even though it's kind of sort of supernatural / science fictiony of what happens to the individuals in the movie, the movie definitely tries to go deep into the drama of the individuals and their relationships. So even throwing all the supernatural and science fiction-y stuff out, a lot of this film is melodrama, and that's probably a lot of the stuff we're going to probably talk about the characters and whatnot. So the spoiler alert is up, and we will talk about everything and anything. Anybody want to set up the movie first? Abe, I know you usually are pretty good at doing that.
All right. So there are a number of characters in this film. Our main focus is a family of four, a husband, wife, and there's a father and son who are son and daughter who are off on a vacation together. We do see signs that there's some kind of strain going on there during a car ride and when they get to the hotel. But there's something that unfolds as we go further in. So they're going to this resort that is, well, very high-end, where they're even greeted with custom-made cocktails, quote-unquote, those can be important later on, for the husband and wife when they get there. And the son makes friends with the nephew of the resort owner. From there, we are introduced to other characters, a couple there's a couple who's one of them is a nurse of his wife who actually suffers epilepsy. There is a very, very rich and kind of snooty group comprising of a doctor. He is very high-strung, calcium-deficient wife, their young daughter, the doctor's mother and their little dog too. And we get some semblance of little things here and there. But it's, these are kind of like spoiler territory because these get little revealed as we go along. But essentially what we get are little things that will unfold to become much more important, such as a diagnosis of the wife of the main family. There is also signs of something very off in the place. It's not too evident, but there is something very too perfect about it. But the main thing is that the owner goes up to each of these groups and mentions, "Hey, we got a special beach that is very exclusive, very nice. We are inviting your family, you folks, there. Just go there and have fun and check it out." And that's where we go from there.
All right, very good. So that's an excellent setup to the film. We're not going to go scene by scene, you know, minute one to minute 140, because again, folks can just watch the film and.
Because we'll also be old by the time we get there.
That's true, but we're here to dissect and discuss various aspects of the plot and characters and whatnot. With that, who wants to start? What is there to say? What's going on?
Well, I did want to start with just a couple of things in the opening of the film that, I mean, we are in spoiler territory, correct?
Yes.
Now I'm just triple checking because I'm always the one who messes it up. In the opening, we really get the seeds on that car ride, in fact, to start, of some of what Knight's message with this film is going to be. The seeds are sort of planted there. You know, in the van on the way, the mother, her name is Priska, she keeps saying, "Stop pushing away this moment." You know, so there's a message. We know that there's going to be a lesson in this about valuing every moment that you have. And, you know, the one little girl, Maddox, asks her dad, "Oh, will they have scuba diving? I want to go scuba diving." And the dad says, "Oh, you're too young." And of course, at the end, there's a callback to that moment, because essentially that's what they have to sort of do to escape. It's not, except it's without scuba equipment. And also, there's a joke about, you know, the spontaneity has been stripped from her. As you age in general, whether it's physically or mentally, there is something that is sacrificed to age. And the realization that death is coming. And there are a lot of references to this particular thematic statement throughout this film. But also our childlike sensibilities, the things we take joy in. And there's a callback to the end when they're building the sandcastle. That's there. There's a lot of callbacks to this idea that the joy in life tends to fade as we get older and become more cynical. And there is a reference there when the two kids meet, when the owner's son and, you know, what's the kid's name? The boy's Maddox's brother. I can't remember his
Trent.
Name.
Trent.
Trent. Is it Trent? Yes. Thank you. He says, you know, to the little boy, he says, we can become neighbors with mortgages. Which was actually kind of a funny line, maybe a little inappropriate for a kid that age to be saying. But I think there's a valid point there in that, you know, he's, you know, that is his concept of adulthood, because it's all very serious and it's all very sort of colorless. And even the girl makes a reference to that later. Maddox talks about, you know, "I had all these colors." I mean, I can go into that later because I made notes. But he plants all of these seeds. You know, and then when they arrive at the opening, at when they first arrive at the resort, there are these employees and they're arranging celosia or something that's in that family. It's closely related to it, I think. I could tell from the way it looked. But that particular plant is also called coxcomb. For those of you who may not know what the typical name is, but if that is what they are, yeah. I mean, just its name in general is sort of like very sexual and very reminiscent of, you know, birth and creation and all of that, which of course is a little bit of foreshadowing, of course. It foreshadows the sex scene later that we don't really see, but we know has happened. But if that's what they are, Coxcomb, what's unique about them is that they remain vibrant even as the seasons become really kind of melancholy and crappy, especially here in the Northeast. And even if the flowers they depicted are not coxcomb, they would be a tropical version of them, which means they would last all year. And these flowers are symbolically, throughout history, they have been symbols of unfading love, like the love that never dies, the love that goes into dark seasons in a relationship. So that really ties to the parents' story, the couple that, you know, we find out is arguing. But it also refers to that bond that's between the brother and sister. And then the little boy that they meet in that opening scene, and they're, you know, at the ice cream bar, you know, he says he collects conch shells and that he has 42 of them. Now, the conch shell is a symbol of awakening someone from ignorance. So I thought that was really interesting. And this is the kid that turns out to be the one who actually gives Trent the final clue at the end on how to escape. So there's an implication in this tiny little, what seems like an insignificant exchange between these two kids, that he has maybe, that he is going to awaken Trent. But probably I found the number 42 interesting because later on in the film they go, oh, we can't have another incident. And I'm sitting here going, how many people has this kid tried to warn? Because even later on, you know, the guy comes out and says, you shouldn't play with those kids. You can only play with those kids. Don't talk to these kids. So it made me wonder how many times this kid had actually tried to warn people. And then the other interesting thing is the drinks the girl is carrying, which we also see formulated at the end. They have a lot of botanicals and leaves in them, but the one that stands out is the pomegranate. And pomegranates are symbols of sorrow. So if you can read all of that in the opening scenes, M. Night pretty much gives you, like, foreshadowing the entire freaking story right in the beginning.
Interesting. One thing I want to note is that I just, for my own curiosity, I looked at the graphic novel earlier today, and all of the stuff with the resort and that involvement was concocted by M. Night. That is not part of the source material.
Yes, I did read. I did the same thing, Eric, thanks to Mike, who sent me the thing yesterday or last night. I did gander at it lightly. And I also found an article that talked about, just gave a general overview of the graphic novel and compared the graphic novel to the film. So I just read that really quickly just to see what was different. And it definitely, M. Night just kind of took this idea and ran with it. It's definitely not an exact follow, is right. My understanding.
Really, all that's in the graphic novel is the part on the beach, and that's it. There's really no, they don't put the plot around it. They don't, you know, the whole reveal at the end of the movie, none of that's there. It's just the story about the people stuck on the beach getting old.
Gotcha.
The way the setup sounds here with the graphic novel kind of makes it like, you know, an unexplained encounter, just like I don't know, the raft story in Creepshow 2. We don't know why those things are the way they are. You just encounter it, you run into it, you come across it, you don't. But and all you can do is try to endure and escape it. It's one of those things about origin, but it's trying to consume you.
Well, and I think it's interesting because I think in the movie they conveyed some of the same. I think Christy actually mentioned it earlier, but some of the same meaning in the story. In the graphic novel, there's this story that one of the characters tells, and it's kind of a myth about this king who had, well, I'm just going to call him Death for simplicity's purpose. Death came and visited, and he said, hey, I'm not ready yet. Can I have 7 more years? And Death said, well, maybe. Only I can decide when you're going to go. But I won't take you now. I'll let you have some more time. But I'll show up someday and take you. And so this guy basically built a fortress and locked himself in there and told his guards not to let anybody in. So he didn't see his wife. He didn't see his kids. Anybody that came to visit him was turned away. And then as it turned out, it doesn't matter because Death is magical and can do what he wants. And eventually Death showed up anyway and pointed out to him that really he had already taken his own life by locking himself in here and not appreciating every day as it came.
Wah, wah.
Well, and there's definitely, Eric, that's really interesting. There's definitely a couple of threads of that in M. Night's version as well. I mean, the beach, oh my God, the beach in itself is, there is so much symbolically going on with that beach. And, you know, the thing is, everything in an M. Night movie, that's what's kind of cool about it, is everything freaking counts. Like, the guy just doesn't throw a random fucking lizard in there just to throw a lizard in there. If he if he shows you a lizard, it fucking means something. You just have to figure out what it is.
Well, I was able to appreciate upon looking at the graphic novel that there was one frame that he pretty much lifted right out and put into the movie. And it's just a frame of somebody's glasses in the sand.
God, yeah.
And we see awesome. That in the movie. I thought it was pretty cool. He just snatched that and put it right in there.
One thing that... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a lot of broad beats of everything that happens on the beach. A lot of that does have parallels, in, if not exact, in the film and in the comic. But it's everything before the beach and after the beach yeah. that the movie creates.
Right.
One thing that's really interesting, kind of cool, especially the sand, even the sand alone, we think of an hourglass and stuff like that. You know, the sands of time and stuff like that. But there's also a really interesting thing that someone pointed out, a review, because I was checked out a review someone I mentioned, because one thing that this beach does is not only age people, but even the bodies of the dead, they age really fast. They return to the earth really quickly. And maybe what realized, as she explained it, is that a good portion of this beach is sand is probably victims of the area who have returned.
Abe, interesting that you brought that up. That was actually one of my little nitpicks about the movie, is that at one point they basically bring the movie to a screeching halt to have this exposition about, well, why aren't our hair and nails growing?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, yeah. That drove me crazy.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Ew.
Not alive.
You know what? That was
aging.
So.
And wouldn't a dead body also be not living material that's no longer aging? So that right. was just something that kind of nagged at my brain.
Well,
that's
do you true. Know what that felt like to me when they said that dialogue? I was with my friend Michelle, and I think she noticed the same thing because she started laughing. I sat there and I thought, oh. This is because they showed it to some fucking screener audience, and the screener audience was like, oh, I wonder, because, you know, their minds are wandering and they're not really understanding what's really going on in this movie. So they decide to nitpick, because that just sounded ridiculous to me. That sounded like they had to stick. He either stuck that in there because somebody made him do it, or he wrote it in there, or he was being really overzealous himself because he wrote this and going, oh no, I have to explain this. And for whatever reason, he did not need to go there. Like nobody cares.
Sometimes when it comes to story, sometimes overly explain something can in a way actually complicate things.
Yeah, I mean, because then you have all these other questions, right? Like you guys just said, well, they said our hair and our nails aren't aging because they're dead, but yet these dead bodies are disintegrating. I mean, okay, so right there, you just blew the – like it just didn't even need to be mentioned.
Right.
Also, nobody really was sitting here going, why aren't there – why isn't their hair getting gray? I mean, shit.
It also doesn't make technical sense. It doesn't make technical sense because – don't nails grow because new cells are pushing them out?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah, it was dumb.
So that whole idea doesn't even make sense.
I think maybe he wrote that when he was like really stoned or on crack or something, because it did not make any sense to me at all.
I think this is kind of the thing, maybe for me, for science background. It's like people think they have a clever idea, but if you know anything, it's just ridiculous. So
I guess I'm gonna ask you about later too, Mike.
So this whole thing, like, there's some mineral formation and whatever that's causing the, it's just a fucking weird phenomenon. Leave it alone. Don't try to come up with a scientific explanation for it, even a stupid pseudoscientific explanation for it. If you want to address the fact that, like I said, people's hair and nails aren't growing, you go, that's fucking weird. Why aren't our hair and nails growing? And move along. Because then I bring up a whole bunch of things. You have girls who go through puberty and never menstruate.
Yeah, that was weird to me, too.
You know, because at the speed at which they're going, they should just be gushing.
Well, oh, God. A lot of weird shit to that effect in this movie.
And Bill's favorite here, they're eating, so they should be just shitting all over the place.
Yeah. Well, that actually kind of brings up another thing about the pregnancy horror, but is that if their bodies are function that quickly, wouldn't there be almost like no window for one of the characters to get pregnant?
Well, see, that's what I think, to go back to what Mike was saying about explaining the weirdness. He almost, with that whole hair and nail thing, you know, there was this awesome Lovecraftian type of sub theme going on there, right? You had like the rocks themselves were very Lovecraftian, because there was this reference, maybe it was in the journal or whatever, to them, to this place being older than time itself. So that had kind of an old god.
Every place is older than time itself.
Right. But my point is that, there's the idea of knowledge that should not be known, you know. So they're speeding up this process to test these life-giving drugs, but look at the high price they're going to pay, you know, and we find at the end. But perhaps they were not meant to know and let these things take their natural course. And then, of course, you have this whole thing where the doctor's wife becomes a hag and she turns into like this crazy, grotesque Medusa. And that was awesome. I loved that effect. I thought it was terrifying and creepy, because she was breaking her bones and then healing up so fast in the bones in the wrong position. And it was just like, that was like something out of the color out of space. So here he's done all of this wonderful Lovecraftian vagueness, right? Where there is no explanation really for any of this. It just exists. Like the pregnancy, it just exists. And you accept it because it is kind of out there. You know, Lovecraft didn't explain all his shit. It was just is what it is. And then he goes and has this big thing with the nails and the hair. And then, you know, and then that whole thing with, well, we get the bends if we try to leave. Dude, no. He should have just left it as, you can't leave. Something's happening.
And that was another one of my nitpicks, Chrissy, that whole, like, supposed magnetic force that makes them pass out when they try to leave. Why didn't it affect them on the way in?
Yeah. See, right. That was a problem for me. So it just shouldn't have been. The better way to handle that was just to, oh my God, we can't leave, and leave that unexplained.
Well, going back to that, there's also, I think it was the nurse of the woman who had epilepsy mentioned that what they could have tried to do was slowly go backwards and, you know, merge back to the other side. But no one tries it, because they're like, who's going to risk 12 years of their life? I'm thinking, like, you're all going to fucking age nothing if you stay here.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if you're going to waste 12 years trying it, you might get out. Like, but yeah, that was definitely a nitpick with me for this movie, because, like I said, there were so many wonderful Lovecraftian things going on with this. Well, and to muck it up with that explanation just totally blew that for me. I was like, oh, dude, you were doing this Lovecraftian, this other thing, because there's so many themes and subtexts in this. I could talk for hours. They really are.
They're, it's really just one note before we get too far away from it. You talk really fast, Chrissy. It's hard to get a word in edgewise.
I'll slow down.
You mentioned that the pharmaceutical company made this beach. I don't think they did. I think they found it.
No, they found it.
Yeah, you're okay. Right.
They did find it. Yeah, I might have misspoke there. They did find it because there is that line where they say, nature gave us this or something.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Okay. And we found it, and it's our responsibility to use it for something good, I guess.
And real quick, just this isn't going to fit in anywhere, so I'm just going to say it now. One of the characters in the movie is a hip hop artist whose stage name is Mid-Sized Sedan. And I cannot stop giggling about it. That's so fucking ridiculous. Mid-Sized Sedan?
I thought
he did himself any favors by throwing that in there.
No, I don't think so either, but I don't know. You know, Phil had made a very interesting comment earlier about the melodrama. And I kind of thought that a lot of these things in the script may have been it's one of two things. Either it was just a bad idea, or we could go with the artistic explanation, which almost works, because I was thinking about this a while back, a couple days, like yesterday, that, everything in life that we take so seriously, right? Like paying our bills and doing this day-to-day shit and getting to work on time and all of these things that are essentially ridiculous that we obsess over that become part of our fabric and how we live, right? The whole point of this movie, as is represented by the beach and the water and the images of the footprints in the sand getting washed away, the umbrella getting buried, all these things. Basically, the message that's being delivered here is that none of this shit matters. In 300 years, you're going to be dead. Nobody's going to remember. Nobody's even going to remember who you are, let alone how good your track record was at getting to work, let alone who, your name was. You were this awesome rapper and your name was Mid-Sized Sedan. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and so I could almost go with that. I don't know if M. Night is actually that clever, but he could be. I'm not going to sit here. I don't know. I'm not an intent.
But at the same time, it was so funny that it caused me distraction.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not a good idea. Is that really all that worse than, 50 Cent? I mean...
That's true.
Well, no, but that's the point, and that's why it's so damn funny.
Well, I think, like I said, I think that there could be an explanation for that if we wanted to go that far.
Well, if he comes out with a commentary, I'll listen to it and see if he explains that.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to hear him do I they do those stupid memes. If you could sit down with one person, famous person, and have a conversation. And it's so funny because I never answer those because I don't want to get laughed at, but I always want to be like, I'd like to sit down with M. Night and just have a big long talk with him about all of his symbols that he puts in his movies, and did he do this particular thing intentionally, or was this an accident? I would find that fascinating if I could spend a whole day with him and just be like, okay, in this movie, did you intend to do that, or was that intentional? If it was intentional, why did you do it? Like, because to me, that's how I learn. And I just think that would be interesting. But that's why I never answer that thing, because I'm like, dude, I'm going to get laughed off the face of the earth. Everybody's picking really cool people like Franklin D. Roosevelt. And I'm sitting M. Night. I just want to get
M. Night Shyamalan is a really cool person.
Yeah.
That's fine.
He seems like he's a sweetheart. But anyway, I'm going to let somebody else talk for a little bit because I need to shut up for a while.
Phil, you've been quiet. You have anything to say?
Not really. I mean, everything you guys discussed about the science and the explanations, and it would have been better to just leave it as a supernatural event without having the characters to try to explain it, I feel is correct. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe they were trying to do that because, or I should say, M. Shanai Shalman tried to do that because he did not want to layer the film all melodrama. Mm-hmm. And if he had and had them try to discuss these things, then it would have just been all their personal issues that would have just kept on coming out. And not that that's a bad thing, but some of those things in these type of films can make folks roll their eyes because they rather just see, you know, the scares and all that other stuff and whatnot. So, that's pretty much why I've been quiet, was because you guys were pretty much, you know, going about and discussing everything that fit with me anyway, and I didn't really have anything further to add. You know, it was like you're reading my mind, you know.
Cool.
Phil, what did you...
I was thinking to ask you. At one point later in the movie, somebody stabs somebody else with a rusty blade. And apparently it, I don't know, taints their blood, and because they're aging quickly, they like disintegrate.
Well, it's actually because of rust. It's rust. It's rust. It's the poisoning from that. And basically that poison is accelerating through the body quickly.
But would rust poison you to that extent? I just don't know. That's why I'm asking Mike.
I'm assuming it was like tetanus or something, that the bacteria that's in it. I didn't think it was the rust itself. I just think he either didn't understand it or was just doing a really shitty job of explaining it.
or maybe Mike, I had the same question as Eric. I took it as tetanus, but maybe like an accelerated version of tetanus that you could actually physically see, just because of the way things were so weird on that beach. But I just kind of assumed it was like a tetanus type of thing. But, you know, I did think that effect was really cool. I don't know what you guys thought. Cool. I kind of liked it.
Understand what was happening. That's all.
Yeah, I just kind of went, okay, that's weird, and I don't think Rust would actually do that, but maybe that's how he's trying to show tetanus.
I really would have appreciated, for our Breaking Bad fans out there, a little Jesse Pinkman going like, tetanus, bitch! And then that would have just... that would have just explained it all very nicely.
Right, right.
I think one scene that was actually pretty effective was the tumor removal scene.
Oh, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was so amazing. Just toe curling. It was,
The idea that the wounds, the incision was healing so quickly, so they actually had to force themselves to hold the wound open just so they could reach in and scoop the thing out.
I know. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was pretty gruesome. I loved it. That was probably my favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I liked that they did a cut, like they showed you just enough to make you queasy and like, ooh, but then they cut to everybody's faces. And so there's a whole bunch that's left to your imagination, and it's just like, oh my God.
Well,
and then when they pull it out, it's so disgusting. You're just like, oh God, I can't. And yet you don't get a long view of it, which was nice too. It was quick.
And also, I don't know about anybody else on the show right now, but for me personally, I can watch horror movies with serial killers slicing people up all day long and it doesn't even bother me. But if you show me actual video of an operation, I'm like, oh, ew.
I'm with you on that.
So like Dr. Pimple Popper. Effect on me because of
Dr. Pimple Popper.
Oh, gross. So I won't even watch that. So disgusting. I won't even go there. Yeah. Well, I think, too, that's because it's a kind of body horror that we're all, none of us likes to go under the knife for an operation, right? That idea is very terrifying.
I love it.
Yeah, well, I like the stuff they give you because I have really awesome dreams.
Yeah, they knock you out. You finally get a good night's sleep.
I know. It's but there is a very, I think, a deep-seated discomfort with, I'm going to be passed out. They're going to cut into my body. Like, bleh. And I think that's why maybe, like you said, the slashers all day long, I could watch that. Because we kind of know that that's the movies, right? Or that that's the hallmark of the genre. But this shit is actually real. Like, you know, if somebody goes in and removes a tumor, yeah, that's gonna happen to you. It's like, oh god. You know, so yeah.
So I don't know if we're ready to get to the end of the movie yet. When we do, I have a couple of comments. Are we ready, or was there more stuff in between that people want to talk about?
Well, I do have like lots more stuff, but I don't want to talk all night.
I will say I will go with Chrissy mentioned the makeup. I thought was really well done. A lot of times it was done subtly. You don't really notice what's going on for a good portion of the film, which is kind of intentional. You know, if you see yourself in the mirror, especially between like the ages of, let's say, 30 and 50, you may not notice a big difference from one year to the next. Which is, you know, kind of a plot point, but there are little things there, just like putting in the crow's feet and stuff like that. I thought it was really
And I did appreciate, I was mentioning the cinematography earlier with the camera swinging around. I did appreciate that they used that to their own advantage, in switching out the child actors. The camera would swing away and come back and there would be a different actor there who was older. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think they did a really good job of selecting actors for the different ages. They seemed pretty believable.
Yes, they did seem to look like the kids growing up. I have a question for you guys, actually, because I don't know if I missed this because I was really like taking copious notes and like, you know, paying attention to the symbols. But one of the things that I thought might have needed improvement of in this, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, because I'm actually asking a question, is that the coral, right, toward the end, do we ever see other shots of that, or is that ever mentioned beforehand? Because that seemed very unjustified to me. That sort of came out of nowhere for me.
I think we see it at the beginning, but it's not commented on.
Okay. Yeah, I think there might have – I felt like it almost was such a surprise to me. And I was like, okay, this is kind of unjustified. This is what I talk about when, you know, an ending is with a, quote, twist, or this kind of surprise just comes out of nowhere. Because all of a sudden we see this note. And I was like, but they show us pans of the beach like a million times. And I don't even remember seeing that patch of coral in the background. Like it should have at least been in the background a couple times or something. Like,
I think it was. It was just not it was extremely subtle and not commented on.
OK, the other question I had was that did anybody else get that the doctor was actually crazy? Because I was confused. I thought that because he was aging, he was just getting Alzheimer's. Confused me.
There was something off with him.
Was it schizophrenia?
When he started with the movie thing, that's when I was like, oh, this guy's got something wrong with him.
Yeah, but I thought it was Alzheimer's because he seemed perfectly normal before that.
Well, I thought maybe it was like dementia or schizophrenia because he also kept accused of the rapper of being near his house and stuff, because he says he's going to steal things from me and shit like that, which is why he kills him suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking, and I don't know a lot about the disease in practice, is something called Huntington's disease, which is a dominant genetic disorder, which is unusual because most dominant genetic disorders are recessive because – you know, otherwise you don't live long enough to pass them on, right? So, but in this case, it's a disorder that doesn't really, I think it's on the X chromosome. No, if X would make men and women, maybe it must be on the Y chromosome. But it doesn't hit men until they're like in their 50s. So by the time you find out you have it, you've already had kids and it's too late to not pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that affects the brain and can cause dementia. And I was wondering if that was a thing that they were going to go with, because that would have been a, something that tied in well, obviously, with aging.
Well, and that brings up something that I was going to ask you guys, because I've heard at least two different comments of this nature about this movie and M. Night Shyamalan in general, which is that there seems to be a trend of him vilifying mental illness. In this movie with the doctor, and then in the visit with the older people, and then in Split with the person who had DID. I was just wondering what everybody thought about that.
I don't really have an issue.
I don't either. I don't see it as vilifying. I see it more as examining its profound effect. I mean, for me, just personally, the reality is that mental illness is a problem, and it screws people up, and it screws up the people around them, the people who love them. And so I never looked at his things as being vilifying so much as examining it and bringing attention to it, that this is a thing. Because there are a lot of families that don't have to deal with individuals who have mental illness in their lives and don't understand that this is not just destructive to the individual. It's destructive to entire families. It's destructive to people around them. So I never really thought he was vilifying it. I genuinely think that most of the time he's trying to show that it is horrifying to live with these situations, and it is very scary to live with people in your life that have these, because sometimes they can be unpredictable, and that's real world horror. So I never took it that way, but I mean, I guess I could see there are people who say he's vilifying it, but I don't. I mean, to me, vilifying it would be making fun of it, and I don't ever see him making fun of it, ever. So
no, not making fun of it so much, but he just seems to I'm trying to be careful with my wording here. He seems to paint everybody who has mental illness with a dangerous brush, as if anybody who has an issue is dangerous. I think that's the main complaint.
Well,
yeah, and I think I have a problem with that. I mean, movies are about the, you know, drama, so it's going to appear that way in movies, but that's not necessarily his intent.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from writing a story.
Right. I mean, he is writing thrillers. So, I mean, it's, are we going to complain about, you know, Norman Bates, there are scary things that come with certain mental illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing Forrest Gump, you know. So this is looking at a thing that does happen, that there are some people who do become violent when they get dementia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's done a whole lot. I mean, are we really looking at, going to go look at Mr. Glass?
I forgot that one. That was another one somebody complained about.
But, you know, that's typical megalomania. I don't think that's the same sort of mentally ill that people are talking about. I get there are people that are sensitive to it for a reason, for a good reason. I'm not trying to dismiss it, but I think he doesn't have exactly a large enough sample size, you know, one way or another, to say that this is, this is a view of mental illness that he has. This is looking at what happens when people get old, and sometimes when people get old and they get dementia, they can get violent with this stuff.
Well, and it would be a pretty boring movie if nothing happened. Everybody was just happy as they got older and died.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think part of it, too, is just the nature of the beast, like you guys are saying. You're trying to show the horrors of, in this case, in the movie Old, you're trying to show the horrors of deterioration and what happens to people. And and also, I think, too, this movie's about shared trauma, you know, and that can trigger things in people. You know, when you're in a traumatic situation, particularly with a group, you know, it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, sort of, you know, all these people sort of start losing their minds. I mean, if we look out into what's going on right now with the pandemic, we can look and see that there's results of shared trauma going on right now. You know, people being assholes on flights and people doing, you know, things that are just kind of out there right now because everybody's kind of confined to one space and they're all going through this shared trauma of this pandemic together. But I think that was more the point of this. But my original question about this was, I wish it had been made clearer because they mentioned it at the end that he had some kind of schizophrenia.
Right. Uh-huh.
But I just thought it was plain old dementia because he was getting old. That's what I thought. I didn't think that was made clear enough to me.
I agree with you that it was not made clear until the exposition scene at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly when the guy is sitting there with a leg bone or something and tapping it against his forehead.
Yeah.
Which was disturbing, and it was an awesome little scene, but I was kind of like, okay, but is this dementia? Like, I just didn't understand what was happening there.
Well, and it wasn't well explained, like you said, until the end of the movie, so it's not, that's not on you.
Right, but I think it should have been, is my point. I think if their point was to show... that if the point was to show that he had some kind of, you know, illness, like, you know,
like his wife should have said something about it,
it should have been made clear because of the fact that we are dealing with expedient aging. The first place you go is, oh no, here's this brilliant surgeon and his mind is going, like, he is going to suffer from Alzheimer's. He's going to suffer from dementia. So I think because there was an aging thing involved in this, that might have been the first place everybody went. So at the end, when it's like, oh, schizophrenia, I was like, really? Like that? Because that looked like Alzheimer's to me. Like that didn't.
Yeah, that's, it's exactly what I thought too until they explained it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think something more could have been done there to make that clear. So, and, you know, hey, listen, if they were doing anything else but aging on this beach, like if they were doing, I don't know, getting younger or something, then I wouldn't have thought it was, you know, like Alzheimer's or dementia. I would have thought, oh, OK, this guy maybe has a problem or an issue. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because it is specifically about aging quickly that those waters got a little bit murky and it wasn't very clear.
I get where you're coming from.
All right, so yeah, go ahead,
Phil.
Oh, I was just gonna say, okay, so what else did anybody want to bring up?
Felt about the escape attempt climbing.
That seemed the girl
foolish.
Yes, it did.
Well, she hadn't really grown up like that's true. Normal, that's so true. I think she made a bad decision. But yeah, it's
yeah.
Well, this goes back to the wandering out of the valley, but it's going to take us 10 hours. So we'll just sit here overnight. You're going to try something, you know, that they should.
Yeah.
You got to try something. And you know, if they can't get out, like I didn't really have an issue with the decompression thing. Because I can understand what, like, for example, like nitrogen narcosis with the bends, it affects you going up. It doesn't affect you going down. So going in and out, I didn't have an issue with it. I thought it was a clever way to explain why they couldn't get through. But in this case, there's no reason to think that it wouldn't work if you're going through the change going up. But again, how much science background did this kid get in the last 3 hours? You're desperate. You try something. You send Shelley Winters through the water, on the hopes that this fat woman can hold her breath for 90 minutes or whatever it was that she was underwater for.
Well, she did die. She did
die. Long enough to take care of the problem.
Yeah.
She cried.
Speaking of which, Sorry, that just totally brought this into my head. At the end of the movie, when M. Night's character has been spying on them, and he sees them go to the coral but doesn't see them come out, on the radio, he's like, I waited a minute and a half. It's like, well, if it's really this important to
wait a little longer, yeah. I'd have waited an hour just to make sure.
It's like, ooh, 90 seconds. Good job, dude.
You get it. Well,
that seemed a little silly to me.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Like, dude, if that were my shit, I'd be there watching, like, for quite a while.
Well, there's two little things that kind of bother me just because of the coincidental nature. Was one was the note, and then the other was the cop being on the beach that they happened to have talked to. Just both those things just kind of, I don't know, felt really heavy-handed to me.
Hmm. The note I thought was cool because it seems like something that the kid would have done if he knew what was going on.
Yeah, I think the kid would have done it. I just don't know that it would have taken that long to come up.
Fair enough.
For a convenient time. No. They're all dead except us two, and now I remember the note.
Well, yeah, that was that kind of bothered me too. Now that I think about it, you guys just mentioned it, and I'm like, yeah, that kind of was out of the blue.
True.
Like, you've had this fucking thing this whole time in your pocket, and that goes back to the coral that I was talking about earlier. Okay, so there's this coral on the beach that, like, is or in the water that, like, we never really see. Eric said it was maybe mentioned once. I think it was mentioned once. I think I did pick up that. But it's never shown to us the whole time. And the kid has this fucking note the entire time, and he doesn't remember, like, hey, that's the coral. I wonder, like, but then again, I guess there wouldn't be a movie if he did it right away.
Well,
it's not ridiculous or something.
No, it's not ridiculous. It's just, I just felt it was a little heavy-handed.
You know what?
Check this out after we get back from the beach. And then later he's like, oh, shit, we're not getting back from the beach.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it just felt unjustified. That's all I'm saying. I'm always sitting here talking about the you know, when you have a twist or when you have a surprise like that or when you have a reveal. In this case, I would call it a reveal, not a twist. It's not justified. So it feels like it comes out of nowhere. In other words, there weren't enough mentions of it. Like, even with the pharmaceutical thing, which is kind of silly, okay, we all admit that. It was a little bit whatever. It was a little bit too neatly wrapped. I will give you that too. However, when it is revealed to us at that point in the movie, all the lights go on in your head, right? You go, oh, yeah, the fucking cocktails and the, oh, okay, I get it. All right. Yeah. So
this is what I wanted to talk about, Christy. Yeah. I was waiting for us to get here. So, okay, I understand that we're supposed to understand that when they arrive and are given these cocktails, the cocktails have their medication in them, so they don't know they're being medicated. But, all right, the one guy's like, yeah, we developed a medication that allowed this woman to go without an epileptic seizure for 16 years. Unless I'm vastly ignorant and unaware of it, that's not how medication works. You don't take one dose that you can't even detect at a cocktail and go 16 years without taking another.
Right.
You take pills every single day. So if they're on the beach aging and
would have been metabolized out, right?
All that food because they're growing and they're metabolizing, wouldn't you need more medication as well? It just didn't add up for me.
That's interesting.
And they couldn't target the food to a particular person to make sure they got more of their medication.
No, but I'm saying in order for the medication to last as they're aging an entire lifetime, wouldn't they need to take more? That's my
right. Point. Yeah, exactly. And they couldn't target them once they were on the beach. They gave them a bunch of food. They could have maybe put it in there, but they couldn't know who would eat what. So they couldn't.
Well,
make
but
sure
these
that
people don't poop either. So I mean, I mean, I don't know.
They would
know.
Spend most of their hour peeing and pooping.
There's just
2 years of waste
everywhere. Instead, Yeah, they're saying that the beach is mostly made up of the people that were here before. It might be true, but it's their poop.
Well, they really have that many years worth of food? I mean, how much food would they need to be able to survive in that hour?
Right. Yeah, there's lots of holes you can poke in this if you stop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, even the baby, you know, my friend Michelle, because the baby was one of the things that kind of slipped by me, you know, and like the baby's born and then it just dies immediately, which I believe in the comic book, the baby actually, you know, grows up.
Yes.
And
that's true.
Yeah. And then the last scene of the graphic novel is the baby as a child sitting on the beach playing with the sandcastles.
I didn't like that they killed the baby because it didn't make sense to me. Well, the baby would have been either in the same time scheme as them.
But my
just
friend,
setting it down wouldn't have killed it.
No, my friend Michelle explained it to me this way because I was like, I didn't get the baby. And she's kind of like me. She likes to watch for symbols and things. And she said, no, what happened there is that the baby is on the same age thing as these people, right? So she's like, if every half hour is a year, right, or whatever they figure out, then the baby would have starved to death in a number of minutes, right? Because if it took 20 minutes for a pregnancy to come to terms, then that's 9 months and 20 minutes.
I guess it could have died from not getting attention, too. The but second she set it down, like,
yeah.
Half a year went by, so it was lonely and died.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, but she was saying basically the baby died of neglect because they couldn't even get food into it fast enough, right? Because when a baby's born, you have to feed it, like, you know, right away, and then it's constantly eating and sucking off your tit or whatever. So it just, the time that they took it out of the womb, supposedly. Now, I'm not saying that this actually makes sense, but it made sense to me with the way she explained it, was that it, you know, that amount of time, in other words, it would, like, a month would have gone by or something in between pulling it out of the womb and whatever, then it would have starved to death, literally. It would have starved. Because you have to feed babies, like, all the time. Like, you can't just be like, hey, hang out for a month. Like, that wouldn't work. They would die. So I think that was the deal with that. But I did like the baby also as a symbol because, you know, later there's that moment where she's carrying, you know, she's carrying the baby in a blanket. And, of course, it turns to dust like all the other bodies. And I just thought that was a really interesting moment that kind of expressed that, you know, when we're born, we're given this life to go forward. But, you know, it doesn't matter if we have this, you know, this beautiful life ahead of us because it's futile. Like, it's a comment on the fact that even giving birth to more of ourselves is futile because, you know, time is relentless. Time is ruthless. Like, death is always going to take you. So it doesn't matter how young you are or how strong you are or how much money you have or whatever. It's like death comes for all of us.
Yep. Nobody gets out of life alive.
Well, yep. I thought that was very interesting too. Just an interesting symbolic comment. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, Simon, you can do that. Like Final Destination, right? You can do that with accidents. You can do that. The idea of doing with aging, and, you know, as some of us have hit the big 50 or 51 or about to, it's amazing to look back and mention it earlier, like to think back. And like I said, that M. Night Shyamalan, we've been watching his movies for 22 years. And for Abe, that may not seem like a big deal because he's been around most of your life. That makes sense. But to some of us, we remember when he was the new guy. I remember when, you know, Tom Cruise was the hot young actor and, or Tom Hanks was a hot young comedian and all this other stuff. And now they're playing, you know, well, not Tom Cruise because he doesn't age. But like Tom Hanks is playing a grandfather, you know, it's just like, fuck, you know, it's just a really weird thing. You have, I remember Rufus Sewell, you mentioned in, Phil from, Dark City, right? Well, somehow he's gotten to play an old man. I don't know how that happened. And it's because Dark City came out fucking 25 years ago. Yeah, it's
because we're old, that's why.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. So it's just a weird, weird thing.
Well, yeah, it's. I think this movie does deal, like I said, when I was talking about existential drama, right? It's dealing with questions about death. It's dealing, which, you know, M. Night Shyamalan does death a lot. But the interesting thing about him is that he always works with the theme of death, but his thematic statement about death is always different. Each film addresses it or talks about a different aspect of it. And in this one, it sort of talks about the inevitability of it, right? The inevitability of death, the ravages of time, the fact that time can heal emotionally. But again, that doesn't make a difference. You know, Priska has that line where she's like, I'm going to be one of the people in those glass cases, you know, because she works for a museum and she sees dead people from thousands of years ago, and how insignificant, again, getting back to the Lovecraftian theme, how insignificant we are against the powers of time and death. And that's why I was saying this is, you know, kind of like to talk about what you're talking about, Mike, with it being mind-blowing that we're seeing all of these people. We remember when these people were young, and now we're seeing them old. There's like, now it's the time that we need to accept our own approaching end, you know? And that's why I think this movie is so disturbing on a deeper level, because if you really get into it, I mean, there's
it's also the fact that
about youth and what you leave behind. And I mean, it's crazy. There's a lot in here.
Well, not only that, but it's that it does happen so fast, and it doesn't seem like it happens fast, but you know, these things that we, it doesn't feel like it's been 20 years. Our life can get frittered away so quickly when you wait. And I think that's part of the theme here, is the idea that the life can happen in the blink of an eye, you know, and it's over.
Yeah.
And it's just weird also because I'm going, you know, today I was going through following some recent deaths in the family. Going through with my mother and her paperwork and all that other stuff, because it's that time is coming, and I can look at it and I can say her mother died when she was 85, and she's probably in better health than her mother was. So she's got like another 10 years, but Jesus Christ, I remember when we started this podcast, it's been 10 years. It doesn't feel like it.
Well, and I will say about the movie that I did find the married couple, how they just spent the end of their time appreciating each other. I found that to be pretty touching.
Agreed.
Yeah, I did too. And I loved the line right before the father dies where he says, "Why did we want to leave this beach? It's so beautiful." I thought that was really kind of poignant, but sad and messed up. And at the same time, I really did like that. And again, that goes back to that Celosia flower in the beginning, you know, in that they really did love each other, and their love never did really fade, but they got so caught up in the little melodrama of their daily lives and like her cheating on them and all this other shit that they forgot about what's really important. Because that's in here, too. And getting back to what Mike was saying about frittering away time and frittering away life, you know, sometimes we get so obsessed with things that are just not important. And it's not going to matter in 300 years. You're going to be in a glass case. Nobody's going to care. You know, and there's a sense of just, I think, hopelessness that's sort of infused in this, too. And I agree with Abe. You know, the script is not great. Like, it's got a lot of, you know, the language is not like real people would talk in a lot of places, but I don't think that was kind of the point.
Acting isn't the best either.
No, yeah. But I don't think that was really the point with this. I think he was, I personally, I think he's having a midlife crisis, and this was his way of expressing it. I really do. That's what I think. But I also found it interesting that the clue, you know, the book that they find, it was almost like a statement on your legacy. Mm. Like, you know, all these other things get washed away, right? The colorful umbrella gets washed away, and he makes a point of showing you that. And that kind of represents, you know, the trappings of life. And then, you know, the necklace gets washed away, the very expensive necklace. So, you know, the things that you require materially are going to vanish. The footsteps get washed away. So, you know, you, it's like you've never been existed at all. And then the sandcastles, of course, get washed away. And that's because the things we build will fall. You know, eventually these great, just like the Mayan civilizations, right? They built this great civilization. Now they're gone. We have no idea what they're about. And that was thousands of years ago. And those people are as distant to us as, you know, we are going to be someday to someone else. We're going to just be an abandoned thing. Oh, that's a house, I guess. And these people used to live in this house and do these things. Mm-hmm. And we're, and people are going to be like, wow, that's really crazy. Let's go to that museum and see the house museum and whatever. But, you know, but like my point is just that these things get washed away. Everything that we consider important gets erased. And the thing that is the most important, which was the love between these people and the way that you cherish others, that's what stays. And then the comment with the book I thought was interesting because that was almost saying like, oh, but if you create art, like he was almost saying like, but if I make my movies and I die, my movies will still be here. This is my legacy.
Well, that's usually what, you know, life comes down to is, you know, what we leave behind at the end. You know, we could, you know, whether it's like kids or a story, a film, some art, or, you know, some action we took it that had stayed with people for so long. It, you know, it's the ripple effects that we leave behind.
Yeah.
And sure, those will, you know, kind of, you know, as like, as ripples do, they fade. As they go, they stretch further on as they do in time. But for us, those ripples, you know, are great and large for us and for the people close to us because, you know, that's what we leave behind. That's our footprint in the sand. And yeah, like footprints in sand, those will get washed away. But in that time, they're still there for us. And I think, honestly, if we hadn't had the resort thing whole set up, that last scene, the family sitting together on the beach, could have been a good way to close off. Just that seeing them together for that last time. Because
mm-hmm.
honestly, I think that's the very important message that was trying to be delivered. Which is why I think I felt so mixed with the epilogue, because there was such a strong moment, because everything, you know, that they were exploring was coming down to that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I agree with you, Abe. I don't know. I guess you guys want to talk about the end or something, but
I mean,
I said what I wanted to say.
I mean, this it, honestly, the strange thing is that it's mostly just to try tie up loose ends. It's not as really as interesting as what goes on the beach itself.
Yeah.
I mean, it was trying so hard to also be upbeat, but it felt so defeated, you know.
Like yeah, because the way the movie ends is these two. Well, they were children at the beginning of the day. Now they're in their 50s, and they're like, "Well, what now?" That's not really. I think they put the epilogue on there to try and tie it up and give it an ending. But I don't think it worked because they're still, you know, what now? You know?
Yeah. And it felt like a very clumsy sort of what now versus like something like in The Thing where, you know, the two survivors are like, what now? It didn't feel that way because it was kind of like, I don't know. It just like, you know, hey, let's call our aunt and tell her what's going on.
They seemed a little too positive. Like,
yeah,
they're going to accept this. Like, I'd be having a hard time accepting being 50 already when I was just like 8 this morning.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, that'd be so overwhelming. The thing is, these kids are also taking some things way too well in stride. That I, you know, the very fact they're so young, yet they're already in the middle of their lives.
And we don't know how much longer they really have, because there's no guarantee they'll make it to the hundreds or anything like that. Some people don't get that far, you know?
Right. Well, they're also...
In fact, they've only had 24 hours to process this.
Right. Yeah. Well, but I think you look at the couple sitting on the beach and say, you know, why did we ever want to leave? There seems to be, which is why I'm perfectly fine with having there been perhaps a fantastic element to it, a mental maturity that was going on, that these were not, this wasn't Big, speaking of Tom Hanks, right, where you have a, you know, 12-year-old in a 30-year-old's body. There was a mental maturation that was going along with their physical maturation. They weren't lacking the knowledge, but weirdly enough, they seemed to be getting the maturity. So, you know, you either buy it or you don't buy it. You know, that's up to you. You know, it's going to, not that it's always a decision, but it's either works for you, it doesn't work for you. So, anyway. I mean, I didn't mind, like, here's, like, so my thing with the ending, I liked the idea that they're using it for medical research. And I get what you're saying, Eric, that's not how medicine works. I get it. I could bullshit explanations through that if I felt like it. I think that was another case of where they were maybe getting more specific than they needed to. I don't think they needed to put a bow on every little thing. I don't need to think they needed to have the kids get out. I think they could have just ended it. I don't think they needed to show us having these people get arrested and then the kids going back home to their aunt and all this other stuff. If they're just going to say that to explain why they ended up there, that here is this weird phenomenon that these people were exploiting and sacrificing these people, I think that would have been a nice balance of giving some explanation to the stuff they set up in the beginning, while also not making sure that we've tied up everything nice and neatly to have a nice happy ending, sort of.
Mm.
I think that might have worked better for me. It's just that everything
would have been more effective instead of having them escape to have them just like build the sandcastle and die.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agreed with Abe there. I like that idea. I think that would have really worked.
Well, see, having read the comic, I felt like the comic petered out. And yeah. I wasn't thrilled where their comic went, because in the comic, the baby doesn't die, and you just end up with the adult baby, which is a creepy term. on the beach, kind of alone and abandoned by Ivory, because everybody's died of old age. And it's a very kind of nihilistic ending, which, you know, life is kind of nihilistic. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that. But as a reader, I also didn't find it emotionally satisfying as an ending. I understand why he wanted to go with this, but it felt like it was almost giving it too much. And so I kind of, in some ways, I liked it better than the comic ending. In some ways, I didn't, because it was like it course corrected and then it overcorrected.
And I think that's fair, Mike.
Yeah, I think it maybe in the hands of someone else, they might have found a happy medium. But I think both source materials have, you know, went too far one direction and one the other.
Sure. Also, I forget what other director we've discussed, and I don't think it was M. Night Shyamalan, but it was someone, but it could have been him, that if he just let, oh, maybe it was Zack Snyder, if he just let someone else come on board and work the script with them.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll agree with that, because he has some repetitive issues, let's say, that might be ironed out with a cohort.
Yes, some bad habits.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes, if you're talented or what or not, sometimes you can get overindulgent when you have too much hands in the pie. And if he said, all right, I got it. Yeah, go on, Eric.
I'm trying to restate what you're trying to communicate, if I understand you correctly, which is that when you have complete control, there's nobody to tell you when you're doing something wrong.
Right. Exactly. And I think he may, because it appears that the producers are still allowing him to have that control. And sometimes we know producers, when they get involved, they can be pains in the asses. But we've seen many, many times where producers are involved, especially like showrunners, that can ground people and point them on a better path sometimes. And it appears it isn't here. And so,
well, sometimes, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was pretty much done. Go on.
I was just going to say, and for what it's worth, I can kind of relate to him, because like, I used to write music and record music. And one of the reasons I would do it all by myself, and do the drums in my computer and do the guitar and the bass all by myself, is because I was a bit of a control freak. So I understand the impulse when you want to create something and you want it to be yours, and you don't want to cede any creative control to anybody else. I understand the impulse, but I can also understand that sometimes, you know, bandmates can help you make it better.
Indeed. That's right. I agree. And that's an excellent analogy, Eric, excellent analogy.
Yep. And I actually think we've probably talked about this with a number of filmmakers who are writer, director, actor, superstar, whatever. And that they just sometimes they need, as Snyder was one of them, there are not a lot that can do everything very well. And
yeah, Aronofsky, maybe his last couple of films.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I just watched The Suicide Squad, and I think James Gunn did a really good job with that. But he's, you know, he seems to be able to act, to write and direct, but not everybody can do that. And I also wouldn't say it's like a brilliant script, but it has got a lot of good stuff in it. So I don't know. It's just, you know, there were a lot of people that they think, and a lot of these people, look, if you're involved in entertainment, you know, you've gone to school, a lot of these actors, you know, are multi-talented, you know, but you know, not many are really talented enough to be at the top of their field. And I think that's the problem. You know, it's just like to be good enough. Like, yeah, M. Night Shyamalan is a better writer than I'll ever be. But is he a good enough writer to be like one of the best Hollywood writers? A lot of help to take his idea or his dialogue and move it into a script. And I don't think he is.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
And in this particular case, it wasn't even his idea. It was based off source material.
Well, it's his idea. Like, in other words, it's still his idea, in that his daughter gave him the comic book for Christmas or Father's Day or something. And he read it, and he said, oh, I have an idea. This would make a good movie, and I have ideas on how to expand it or do some different things with it. So mm-hmm. His ideas are still there. And even the idea of saying this is a good thing that could make a good movie, that's also an idea too. If the idea didn't originate with him, he still brought his ideas to it.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough.
I was just pointing out he didn't create it from scratch. That's all.
Correct.
Right. He adapted it, adapted screenplay. Yeah. And like a lot of adapted screenplays, as you specifically mentioned, Mike, since you've read the source material, there were some major changes at points.
And if I didn't say it, because I feel weird, I know in my head I said it. I don't remember if I said it out loud. If anybody wants to read the comic, you just do a Google search for free comic Sandcastle. And it should be like the first thing that pops up.
Because I support artists.
Yeah, well, okay. It's there. Or yeah, you could certainly go and see if it's, well, I'm sure with old, it's been published. You could probably find the hard copy on Amazon, or you can go to Comixology and get the digital copy.
Well, it also depends. I mean, yeah, you know, as we've discussed offline prior to this episode, you know, Pluto and Tubi have movies for yep. free for anybody. So,
and that free, you have to rot your brain by watching ads.
Right, yep. right. So they're still paying the artist. So maybe you know, obviously, if Mike read it online for free and didn't buy like Eric, the artist still may have received something, depending on how many downloads or whatnot. I mean, so
I just give it a shit, Phil.
Fair enough. All right, so we're an hour and 50 minutes in, so we're pretty close to wrapping it up. I guess we can probably do that and give our final thoughts on the film. But before we do that, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It is a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are going to be recording a new episode of another podcast later this month.
At some point we'll be doing a new episode of Cinema a la Carte, which is a kind of catch-all podcast for movies that do not fit neatly in the Dark Discussions umbrella.
Yep, very good. And let's see, Barrett, me, you, and Johnny did a monthly podcast just this past June. What was that all about? And what was the podcast?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, and we did LGBTQ Month. We reviewed three films, lesbian art house movies.
Four.
What was that?
Four films.
Was it four?
Yep.
Four films for the month of June, and they are all up to listen to now.
And then recently we just released an episode where we interviewed a author.
Yes, we interviewed the author of the Resurrectionist Papers.
Reincarnationist
Papers, sorry, yes. And it is the source material for the new movie Infinite with Mark Wahlberg.
That's right.
And we interviewed the author.
Yep, so people can go check that out, hear about Infinite, the movie, and the man that basically was the guy that came up with it. Chrissy, you do things.
I do. I write short stories primarily. I'm almost done with a novel. And, I don't know. I do a lot of stuff. I have a magazine that I'm working on. I've got chapbooks going out. I've just been very crazy lately, which is why I have not been on Dark Discussions that much lately. But you can check me out at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
Excellent. All right, so I guess we can get our final thoughts on this film here, Old by M. Night Shyamalan. So let's go in. I had the order. It looks like I closed it. So we'll just start from scratch. So Abe, why don't you go first?
I wasn't really exactly crazy about this film. I do think there were some really cool things. I do think like certain aspects of the body horror, some left the imagination and some gruesomely displayed. I think there was some great camera work, and there's some interesting themes, as you've heard tonight, that we've just dissected and looked at very closely. I, however, found the script to be an absolute disaster in terms of dialogue and certain choices in story direction that really hampered the experience, for me, at least for me. I really think the dialogue can really take you out of it. It did for me, even in some of the most poignant moments. It's not the worst Shyamalan's ever done. That's The Happening or The Last Airbender. But it's definitely not one of his best either. You could go go see if you want. But if you're very hesitant, whether from what you've heard or you're just on the fence regardless, it'll come streaming eventually. But it's, you know, as you heard, it's a mixed bag. Not terrible, not great, not fantastic, and it's not and not piss poor either. But, you know, that's just how it kind of goes with Shyamalan's films. Hit and miss.
All right, sounds good. For me, it was okay. The epilogue or twist or whatever anybody wants to call it, I know that bothered some folks, and you know, the science and stuff, related to that can be an issue. But I felt the thing that was the weakness was, as Abe and such have been saying, there's a lot of the dialogue, children becoming adults physically, but their minds a lot of times are working as if they're adults, and things of that nature, the melodrama and things of those were some issues. The idea is really good, though. The movie is interesting for what I think most people will consider a miss. It's still something to, I guess, admire in some ways. And as Eric mentioned, that if people are looking for something original in horror, this is most certainly an original film or idea. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go out and see it. Probably worth waiting for Netflix or something of that nature. But if you're a fan of M. Night Shyamalan, it's probably worth a look. Eric?
I enjoyed this movie more than I didn't. I am perfectly willing to concede that it has some issues. However, I found it conceptually interesting enough to override those issues for me personally. So I liked it. I would currently, that's not the word. what the hell am I saying? I would encourage people to go see it to support original art if you're tired of remakes and sequels, because it's a money equation, folks. Hollywood doesn't care about making interesting movies. They care about making money. So if you want to support original material, spend money on it.
All right. Very good. Let's go with you, Barrett.
Yeah. I liked the movie. I didn't think it was Shyamalan's greatest nor worst. There are some concepts in the movie I really, really like. It's definitely got some flaws if you look too closely. But generally, I overall like the movie.
All right, very good. And let's go with you, Mike.
I think I probably like this the most out of everybody except for Christy. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, if you look at it too deeply, there's an awful lot of flaws in it. Logical flaws. I think it works as a metaphorical story. That's not going to necessarily make it for everybody. I'm not saying that there aren't valid points to the criticisms. I just didn't let those little things really bother me. Like I said, for a Twilight Zone movie, I really enjoyed it. If you are at all interested in it, I'm with Eric. I would certainly always recommend people go see it in the theater if, you know, that's not an issue for you. Understand, because of current circumstances, that might be an issue for some people, and I understand. But yeah, you know, this has been a recurring theme in this podcast now for 11 years, where an original horror film comes out and everyone bitching about I hate remakes and sequels then doesn't go to see it. So, yeah, I would certainly support it if it is something that you're interested in. If not, you know, give it a rent when it comes out.
All right. Sounds good. Chrissy.
I agree with mostly everybody here. I think I probably liked it more than the guys did, but I did enjoy this movie. Again, it's not what everybody's saying. I totally echo. It has some flaws. It's not one of Knight's best. It's not one of his worst either. I think it falls somewhere in the middle. But overall, I think this is a thinking person's movie that has some valuable things to say. I will stress, though, that this is a heavily existential movie. So if you don't want to think about your own impending death and some other really depressing messages, then I would definitely avoid this, especially right now. But if you enjoy looking for subtext, if you like looking at symbols, and there was so much that more that I had, you know, written out to say tonight, but didn't get the opportunity to, I may even do a blog post on this actually. I do recommend this film, particularly if you know, you have always enjoyed Knight's films in the past and make your own decision. I do also agree with the guys that I think the story was wrapped up a little bit too neatly. I would have liked the framing, I'm going to call it, the whole framing of the resort and everything. But, you know, so I just advise an adjustment of expectations, but I also support Eric's idea in that we do need to go to the theaters to support these films that are a little different, or, you know, we're not, or, you know, studios aren't going to be wanting to make them. So anyway, that's what I recommend. I recommend go see it and decide for yourself, unless you're really freaked out about your own death, in which case I would not go. That's it.
All right, sounds good. If I had spoken up more in this episode, existential would have been a term I would have used. So there is a good example of another person like you, Chrissy, that was reading my mind tonight. So once again, this is Old by M. Night Shyamalan. It's a 2021 film released on July 19th for one show at the Lincoln Center. But then July 23rd everywhere at theaters, so it's not at VOD yet. And I do want to mention, as Eric most certainly pointed out, Michael Giolakis, the cinematographer, deserves a nod. And he's the guy that did It Follows and various other films. So, with all that stated, Eric, why don't you do this out?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's just talk about Old. Come back next time. We'll have another topic.